Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on a possible coronavirus case in Porter County. Brandon Smith reports on the prosecutor's discretion bill, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Steve Coxhead, president of the Indiana Passenger Rail Alliance. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana and Porter County health officials are waiting to see if a person potentially infected with the coronavirus does in fact have the virus. Porter County Health Department Administrator Letty Zepeda says the individual has been isolated and is recovering and no longer has a fever. She says medical tests have been sent to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The person was tested and those tests have been sent to ISDH. ISDH in turn has to send them to CDC. They're the ones that actually do the analysis. We are waiting for the results. The results can take anywhere from 24 to 36 hours.
She says one of the difficult aspects about identifying the coronavirus is that its symptoms are close to those of the flu, but people can protect themselves by following simple hygiene tips like washing your hands, covering your mouth, and sanitizing surfaces. State officials have put the Gary Community School Corp.
Lakeshore
on notice for violating Indiana law by offering enrollment incentives last fall. According to the Times, the district posted on its social media accounts offering $25 Visa gift cards to parents who referred students to successfully enroll in Gary schools. The post said those students would also be entered in a raffle for an iPad. Indiana law prohibits schools who receive state funding from offering incentives with monetary value. The school board will review the district's social media posts as a part of the next routine audit of Gary schools.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Site work is underway in Crown Point for a war memorial that was delayed for years by the Great Recession after the 2008 financial crisis. Crews began clearing trees on Wednesday for the memorial, which will feature three separate monuments, one for World War I veterans, another for World War II veterans, and one for victims of the Holocaust. The Times reports that a walkway between the two war memorials will be lined with plaques describing key events between those two conflicts. Planners hope to have the memorial finished by 2021, but no later 2022.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Two contradictory state bills meant to decide who gets access to Lake Michigan beaches passed out of committee Monday. The one in the Senate aligns with a 2018 Indiana Supreme Court decision that says the public has a right to use Lake Michigan beaches up to where the high water mark usually hits the sand. It also defines what kind of activities are allowed there, like walking and swimming, which the court said the state should decide. Kendra Bartlett lives in the northwest Indiana town of Long Beach.
Because the recreational use definition has not been answered by the legislature for over 2 years, the temperament and attitude of many of these lakefront owners is still to harass the beachgoers and kick them off their beach.
The Senate bill would also leave it up to the State Natural Resources Commission to help communities interpret where private property ends and public beach begins. A competing bill in the House would allow lakefront property owners to claim the sole rights to use the beach as long as those rights were stated in the most recent deed to the property.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A Senate committee approved a bill Tuesday that retaliates against Marion County prosecutor Ryan Mears over his decision not to prosecute simple marijuana possession. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the measure empowers the attorney general to take over those cases.
The bill says if a local prosecutor makes a policy decision not to prosecute certain crimes, the Indiana Attorney General can appoint a special prosecutor to do so and charge the county to pay for it. Parvane Stover represents the AG.
Our stance on this is simple. If you don't like the laws on the books, come to the State House and lobby to change them. Don't just pick and choose to enforce the laws that you want to.
Dave Powell represents the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Council. He says a local prosecutor's discretion is their holy grail.
You know, I filed the death penalty 3 times in my 20 years. I know of electeds that would never file the death penalty because they don't believe in it. So should they be removed from office?
The committee passed the bill 6-3, though some who voted for it expressed serious reservations. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Lake and Porter County prosecutors do not support state legislation that gives the Attorney General's office power to overstep their authority. In December, the Lake County Council started considering an ordinance violation that would give police officers discretion to write tickets for possession of marijuana under 30 grams. Lake County Prosecutor Bernard Carter said he is concerned that the bill could provide the Attorney General's office carte blanche to take over an office at any time for any reason. State Senator Karen Tallien, who has long advocated for marijuana legalization, says the bill, which now goes to the full Senate for consideration, opens the door to, quote, a political circus and leaves questions about how prosecutors quietly decide against charging some crimes.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A Senate committee took hours of contentious testimony on a measure that would lower the age at which children are sent to the Department of Correction. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports major portions of the bill were entirely removed on the fly just moments before a final vote was taken.
Provisions that remain expand the list of crimes that could send a delinquent child to the Department of Correction. The bill lowers the age of those children to as young as 12, and it potentially puts children in DOC longer. Shane Shepard is a former youth offender.
So if you put a 12-year-old in the adult jail system, has never experienced sex, never went through puberty, does not have an identity, what do you think his identity is going to be?
The system is also disproportionately skewed against people of color. More than 24 people testified against the bill. Only one person spoke for it, Prosecuting Attorney's Counsel's Dave Powell.
It isn't always just about the offender. You know, there is often a human being or a family that's a victim, and they're often of color. And that someone needs to stand up for them, too.
The bill heads to the Senate floor. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A recent study from Ball State University reveals how property tax caps affected cities and towns across Indiana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton tells us the report shows how local revenue declines led to decreased public services.
Property tax caps took full effect in 2010. They were put in place in response to local governments raising rates to fill in funding gaps from the state during the Great Recession. The study uses data from the United States Census Bureau to see how the property tax caps affected municipalities' budgets and staffing. Report co-author Dagny Falk says reduced budgets led many communities to cut services from road repairs to public schools.
Property taxes are the largest revenue source for local governments in Indiana and most local governments all over the U.S. So rate caps have definitely decreased local government's ability to raise revenue through that source.
Falk says while the study focused on larger municipalities, there are plans to further study the effects of property tax caps on other cities and towns in Indiana. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Attorney General Curtis Hill is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to rule on the constitutionality of a 2017 anti-abortion law. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the law was blocked from taking effect by lower courts.
If a girl under age 18 in Indiana doesn't or can't get consent for an abortion from her parents, she can go to court to bypass that requirement. The 2017 state law said a judge will decide if the parents are informed of that hearing. A federal district court blocked parts of the law from taking effect in 2017, and a three-judge panel of a federal appeals court affirmed that decision in August. The same appeals court declined the state's petition for a rehearing, and in an opinion, one judge said the U.S. Supreme Court was the only institution that can give an authoritative answer on the law. That's why Attorney General Curtis Hill says he's asking the U.S. Supreme Court to decide on the lawsuit. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Lawmakers in 2019 passed gaming legislation that was called the most transformative measure for the industry in decades. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, despite those big changes, the legislature likely isn't done tweaking the state's gambling rules.
One of the biggest provisions of the 2019 gaming bill was legalized sports wagering, including mobile bets. The Gaming Commission, industry leaders, and lawmakers all say they're happy with how it rolled out. But Representative Terry Austin says there's still work to be done. Austin is one of the longest-serving members of the House Public Policy Committee, which handles gaming bills. She says she's worried about sports gaming's impact on college athletics and wants universities to take a leadership role
in how you're going to protect the integrity of your players, of the sports, the games themselves, and of the public.
Austin points to Purdue's recent decision to ban students, faculty, and staff from betting on Purdue teams and games, though she questions how enforceable that is. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Lawmakers and activists gathered at the Indiana State House to support redistricting reform ahead of the new maps drawn in 2021. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the bipartisan group promoted two bills for greater transparency in redistricting.
Next year, Indiana's constitution requires legislators to redraw maps for state and federal voting districts based on population data from the U.S. Census. Republican State Senator John Ruckelshaus has authored legislation to promote greater transparency in that process. One bill he's offered for the last 3 years would create a redistricting commission. The second bill would create an educational tool to teach citizens about the process and allow them to draw their own maps.
We've entered an era now that people want transparency. The ultimate goal here is to draw as competitive maps as possible. Competition is a good thing.
Ruckelshaus says these bills have both Republican and Democratic support in both the House and Senate. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Farmers across the Midwest are facing tight profit margins and rising health care costs. And that means some hold off getting medical treatment or forego health insurance altogether. As Side Effects Public Media's Samantha Horton reports, some state farm bureaus are trying to fill that gap.
Out on his family's farm in northern Indiana, Jacob Smoker does his evening chores feeding the cattle.
We raise beef cattle primarily. That goes to grocery stores, things like that, but then also we do row crops as well. Non-GMO corn, non-GMO soybeans, things for like tofu processing, as well as seed corn and wheat.
After working in Chicago, Smoker came back to the farm a few years ago and says one of the biggest challenges has been healthcare costs.
Each person in the operation kind of has their own way that they're doing healthcare. I've got a brother that's running without any right now. I've got some. My other brother runs with Department of Defense. He's a reservist in the Army.
And Smoker's wife is working in part to get health insurance for their family.
Myself, my wife teaches, and right now that's a really, really good benefit for our family. She doesn't do it for the money. It's mostly the insurance side of it.
Lots of Hoosier farmers face a similar problem, according to an Indiana Farm Bureau survey. At the group's annual convention in December, President Randy Crone told members that health care would be a top priority for 2020.
We had about 2,000 of you answered the survey. Two big things came out of it. One, it was very, very clear. Overwhelming majority said the health care cost was adversely affecting your farms, or the bottom line.
But Indiana law doesn't allow the Farm Bureau's proposed group health plan to cover sole proprietors. So the Bureau is looking to create that option, as Tennessee and several other Midwest states have done. Director of Public Policy Katrina Hall says there might be some pushback, but believes this is the best option to pursue. She says it will offer another option to the Affordable Care Act marketplace.
There may be some health insurance providers who feel like this is competition for them. I would point out, though, that aside from what's offered on the ACA exchange, the primary provider in Indiana does not offer individual policies.
However, these sorts of association health plans are raising concerns. Kevin Lucia of Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute says they can carry a risk. Healthy people might gravitate to these plans, leaving traditional plans to cover the most expensive care.
And the people in the traditional markets ultimately could face higher premiums over the long term. And that's an important risk to consider.
Lucia notes plans like the one the Indiana Farm Bureau wants to offer do not have to abide by the Affordable Care Act regulations. That may mean people with pre-existing conditions don't get covered, and there isn't robust mental health or maternity coverage.
So those are the kinds of things that I think state policymakers have to take into consideration.
Crone says the Farm Bureau plan will require a health evaluation, and that might cause some to be denied.
This isn't for everybody, but it will help a lot of our members. And I think it's another choice on the market that will help a lot of our members.
Back at the farm, Jacob Smoker realizes not every member of his family might be accepted into the group plan.
Every family's got some. You know, my mom's got a heart condition that would probably exclude her from that.
But he still feels it's the best option, especially when it comes to younger generations taking over the family farm.
Folks like myself, young families, people that are coming back to the farms, it's hard enough to come back to an ag operation as it is. And if you can alleviate some of that burden through lessening the healthcare cost on an operator, that would be a huge benefit.
The Indiana Farm Bureau leadership hopes to start offering health plans for next year. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Steve Coxed, president of the Indiana Passenger Rail Alliance.
New here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
InvestEd is an Indiana-based nonprofit that's focused on providing financial aid literacy and some transparent education funding options for Hoosier students and their families as they look to higher education options out here in Indiana. And they've just put out a new survey. And to tell us more about it, we have Bill Wozniak, who is with InvestEd. Bill, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having us, Chris. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's an interesting study that has come out, and some rather, maybe for some, shocking statistics. One of which I know here is that nearly 9 out of every 10 Hoosiers, so we're talking about 87% actually, really value education beyond high school. And it's, I guess, not surprising because we know that going from the governor all the way down through the administration and the rest of state government, they're encouraging folks who are not quite ready for the new workforce in the 21st century to work that way, to take the educational steps they need to take. Tell us more about the study and how InvestEd helps it.
So once a year at the end of the calendar year, we send out a survey, work with a company, and send out a survey and interview people across the state to get their opinions on higher education funding, and things like that. And as you pointed out, almost 9 out of 10 responded with a perceived value of education beyond high school, something that is very important. This is consistent with what we saw last year. This also dovetails with what we see in our work across the state helping families with funding college information. So the Hoosiers seeing value in post-secondary education very high, and it continues to be something that is perceived as a very important thing.
When you take a look at these figures, and that such a high percentage of figures have this value in higher education, does it surprise you at all? You say it's a kind of a continuation from last year, isn't it?
Yes. The interesting thing, I believe, is when we take three of the data points, the second data point that I think is important is the 80% are concerned about the average amount of student loan debt. And so that's very high as well, 8 out of 10 concerned about the average amount of student loan debt that students take on. And so you have the first step where people value the education beyond high school. Second step, a very high amount are very concerned about debt associated with that education. And then the third part, the 91% that want free and transparent help with planning for college, I think the three of these taken together show the value perception, then the concern about the debt that may be taken on to get the education, but also over 90% want some help with this process so that they can get the education that they value, but avoid some of the debt that they're nervous about, I believe.
Mm-hmm. We've talked here about the importance of workforce development, about the move that is getting the Hoosiers ready for the workplace of the 21st century. And we have, I'm sure, a lot of companies that are doing their best to help attract and retain workers in these jobs in particular. Are they being encouraged, as far as you know, and do they need to be encouraged more to be able to help those people that they have brought into the workplace to help pay for these expenses of college and make sure that they get their student loan debt as low as possible?
This, again, is something we're seeing day to day, and then the survey dovetailed with what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
When you open up different articles online and you see different companies across the country and across Indiana adding new types of benefits for their employees, it often is something along the lines of paying down student loan debt or helping with going to college, funding assistance, things of that nature. This is a type of benefit that more and more students and workers and families are interested in. And so as opposed to 401k or healthcare, some of these things that are more traditional, these type of benefits are being really asked for by the new workers. So then the question becomes, how can the companies do it? And there's a lot of different ways that they can go about it. But in our survey, 81% said that companies are better positioned to attract and retain talent if they offer some of these types of balance, of these type of benefits. And then 82% say that cities and towns will gain a competitive advantage if they offer some of this free help in planning or paying or refinancing or these different types of things. So it's something that a lot of our respondents said they're very interested in.
Well, it sounds like that there are a lot of organizations as well as businesses, and we're talking about organizations and communities that realize that the people that come into the workforce in these new jobs that are created, that have come out of college, they have to look to the short term as well. They have to deal with these immediate problems of student debt, as well as look all the way ahead to retirement, too.
They absolutely do, and that's one of the things that I liked about the survey this year. When there's sort of a theme, sometimes you don't get that lucky, right? It doesn't come out that way. But I think there's sort of a theme right through the survey this year where people say, I want to have a good life. I want to have an opportunity down the road. And so, you know what? Post-secondary education of some form is going to be important for that. And then I need to fund it in the least debt-filled way possible. So how do I go about that? I think some trusted resources would be good. And then when I get to my job, wherever that is, if that entity helped me with limiting my debt, paying off my debt, avoiding additional debt, things of that nature, it's consistent. Before, during, and after the education, there's a real theme this year in what we heard back from Hoosiers that were surveyed.
If you will, tell us what InvestEd can help do. I noticed in mentioning what you've been able to talk about in the survey, that there's more obviously importance to being transparent. How can InvestEd help in making sure family members and students as well are getting the information they need and the help they need, so this way they're not going to be buried in debt, and student debt in particular?
Absolutely. Invested is a not-for-profit here in Indiana that helps any Hoosier family anywhere in Indiana with completely free planning for paying college help. And so we work with over 150 Indiana high schools where we give over 500 presentations each year. We help over 10,000 individual families with calls or live chat or even in-person meetings, whatever works best for the family. And so it's any type of planning how to pay for college question, whether it's the FAFSA, whether it's how do I get going, my student is a 9th and 10th grader, how do we get going, whether it's working with different high schools, any of those types of things. And then also after college or during college, when families have more questions along the lines of, wow, I have this debt. Am I stuck forever? Are there different things I can do? Can I do federal consolidation? It's really a before, during, and after type help that we provide, and we're happy to do so. And more schools and families are taking advantage of it, and that's a very good thing.
And the website is InvestEd, that's I-N-V-E-S-T-E-D, Indiana, one word, .org. And Bill Wozniak, thank you very much for talking about this, about the results of the survey, and hopefully that people will turn to you folks and find out more information about getting the help they might need.
Chris, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. Unemployment levels in Indiana and across the country are at his.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.